today's topic is what happens to us after we die. Yeah. Before we jump into that, let's go through those who are here for the first time. Yeah. Tell us your name and how you got to know the
Yes,
good. What, tell us your name again.
Eng Hui.
Welcome. Anybody else who is new here today? So far, introduce yourself before. After referring to the body is very simple. After we die, our body start to stop function. Yeah. Well, technically, when enough of the bodily organs stop functioning, then we are considered dead. Yeah. Throughout history, the definition of death has changed. So maybe like a few hundred years ago, people think that someone has died simply because they were not able to detect their breath, or they are not able to detect the heartbeat. Modern science has in a way helped us to have a more granular measurement. So today, like even in movies, and I have first-hand experience, the doctor will, you know, take the flashlight, flash at your eyes to check for dilation. Yeah. So the pupil dilation is a function of part of the brain. Yeah. So if the brain is dead to that point that the pupils don't dilate, even when you shine a light on it, don't move, then it means even the very core functioning. Yeah. The definition of death has changed over the years. You can see decades and centuries. The strange thing is that because of that difference, there are some articles that say, in the past, sometimes people think that individuals have died, and then prepare coffin, funeral, everything, and then suddenly they wake up. Yeah. So it is that they may have suffered a stroke or a heart seizure, yeah, and then they just went unconscious but didn't die. Yeah, but according to how people understand death in the past, then they thought the person has died and so started the whole process. Yeah, of course there are some extreme cases of where individuals, you know, get buried alive and then things like that. I even read an article about how in some Western countries the coffin would have the tombstone would actually have a stick coming up and a bell or something, and it's attached to a string that goes into a coffin, so in case if you really didn't die you pull, and then so in the cemetery those gardener or whoever, yeah, the first few days or a week after they have, you know, then they will keep a lookout. Ding, ding, ding. I don't know how true that is. Yeah. So death is something that all civilizations have recorded, yeah, and recognized. You don't need to be a scientist to have encountered it. Yeah, we witness death in our family, either when growing up or among our peers when we reach a certain age. What's perhaps not so easy to wrap our head around is what happens after that. Yeah, if we talk about just the physical body, it's not a very complicated thing. Yeah? Although from science, from biologist kind of view, it's hard to determine when exactly we say the body is dead. Because it's a continuous process, you know. From the state of so-called being alive, where the heart is still pumping, to the point where it stops, then the flow of blood to the brain, key organ that must not die is the brain. Yeah, everything else, most of the things can die, you can chop off, as long as you don't bleed to death. The bleeding itself don't kill you, know. It's the fact that if you bleed too much, then there's not enough pressure to pump blood to the brain. Once the brain don't receive enough oxygen, the brain dies. Yeah. So I saw some documentaries, they say, even the present day scientific definition of clinical death, after that, it takes a long time before the rest of the body, so-called, start to go through the breakdown process. Yeah, it takes a while. It doesn't immediately like, oh, die already, then, okay, all the cell, okay, tia tia tia. No, it takes a rather protracted process. In the Majjhima Nikaya, the very often cited sutra, the Satipatthana Sutta, it talks about 9 stages. In Chinese, it's called Jiu Xiang Guan. 9 stages of decay. From the point of death, day by day, yeah, over a period of time, the body undergo changes. But I would think that for most of us, our interest in today's topic is not so much about the body, huh? So besides the body, what is there? Yeah. For most Singaporeans today, we cremate the body. Yeah. But what else is there besides the body? And to me, asking this question, exploring this question, has to start with when we are alive. Because at this point in time, if you think about it, after we die, we say that it's not just the body, then it means that when we're alive, it shouldn't just be the body, ma. It shouldn't be that while we're alive, only the body. Then after we die, somehow come out with something else besides the body. Yeah. So what else is there besides the body? The fact that you are listening to this talk, or you are watching on YouTube, there's this ability to hear and to see. Yeah, that as every word is being spoken, yeah, the sound travel through the medium of the air, hit your ear, yeah, or recorded into the electronic medium, at some point uploaded to YouTube, stored in the server farm across the whole world. And then someone click play and whole process. And finally from the speaker or the earpiece, reproduce the sound. And then the person this sound now, yeah, reach somebody in future. And the so-called somebody, you know, what else is there besides the ear? Yeah? Besides the ear, what else is there? We can say there is the hearing. That is true in Buddhism, we call it the ear consciousness. Yeah? The ear consciousness only hears sounds, doesn't interpret words. We can do a very simple experiment. Like, for example, I say a few words, and by now some of you have heard it often enough that even though you don't know the language, you also know what I'm saying. Yeah? So, if let's say I say, Kiwa Ogenki de. All of you should hear the sound, yeah, or should be aware of the sound. Some of you may, while even hearing, there's different level. If some of you are, let's say, paying attention to something very intensively, while you're within the range of the sound, you may not be so clearly aware of the sound even as you hear it. Yeah. So, for us to so-called hear the sound, there must be a slight, at least minimal, attention given as well. So when I mentioned the sentence earlier, kyo wa ogenki desu ka? Yeah, so all of you heard the sound, but only some of you can understand what it means. Yeah. What does that mean? Are you okay today? Yeah. How are you today? Things like that. Yeah. Kyo is today. Kyo wa. Yeah. Ogenki desu ka? Ogenki is like, how are you today? Are you okay today? Are you okay? So, all of you hear the sound, huh? But how come only a handful understand it? In Buddhism, we say this understanding comes from the mind consciousness. It's a function of the mind consciousness, to interpret the sound. There are some modern scholars or some who try to say the mind is basically the brain. Yeah. But then again, there are a lot of other evidences in modern day where there are some individuals, they go through accident, half the head is gone. Yeah, literally you see a hole there. But perfectly functioning, no? Perfectly functioning. It's not hoax or fake one, no. In one of the novice retreat I attended many years back, one of the participants, the front part is outing to the left. Just seeing it for some people is traumatizing. Yeah, for me it's still okay. Yeah, but yeah, it was yeah, basically 你看旁边哦, 是一个 凹进去的咧. Yeah, and if you think about it, this part in science we say this, the frontal lobe in charge of making decisions. So, but as I recall my impression, that guy, he doesn't look like someone without self-control, no. In fact, among the candidates, he was among those who have more self-control. Yeah. So there's a lot of discussion, okay? So is it just the body, or is there something else beyond the body? Yeah. From our own experience, the question boils down to, what do you call that thing? You know, that awareness that is what is paying attention, you know? Yeah. In Buddhism, we call it consciousness. A different kind of consciousness. And the consciousness don't exist by itself also. Depends on condition. Depends on what? Depends on the senses. Yeah, as condition, together, yeah, then arise, and there's awareness. So from the consciousness, then there's different function, yeah, functions including our ability to cognize and give label, yeah, formation of term is idea of perception, yeah, labeling things, the whole thinking process, determination, up to making decisions, yeah. But human life is not simply just about interaction and then making decisions. Yeah, we are very complex creatures. Yeah, we have our likes and dislikes. Yeah, so these likes and dislikes in Buddhism is also part of the mental psyche. In a way, if you compare the descriptions in the sutta, yeah, with modern psychology or modern literature that describe our human existence, one key distinction that you'll discover is, number one, in Buddhism we don't describe a soul, yeah, or self, if we will, yeah. We also don't describe so-called the heart in terms of emotions, yeah. In many texts, there is only two categories, body and mind. And mind includes all the subset states, yeah, mental states of, yeah, and is considered as a function of the mind. Function of the mind. So from these differences, perhaps we could say that our standpoint is different. Yeah, we're trying to describe the same thing, but from different standpoints, so our emphasis is different. Yeah. Some years back, I was having some, I was going through some of the texts, and in some classes, we go through the five aggregates. And so I was deliberating over this thing about feelings, you know, because in the second aggregate is usually translated as feelings. So I had to do a mini research, yeah, go and find feelings. Where does this word come from? Then I found that the word feeling in the Western dictionary didn't come into common use until as late as recent 100-200 years. I was so surprised. I was like, because in the Western world, you know, there's a lot of emphasis on feelings, right? Feelings in terms of emotions. Yeah, but the word feelings didn't come into common use until in the recent 100-200 years. I was most surprised. Yeah. In Buddhism, as I mentioned, the emotions part is actually classified as oftentimes as a secondary mental object. Yeah. What we call mental concomitants. That means another part of the mind that arrives together with consciousness. Yeah. So it's a secondary function. Yeah, secondary function. Subservient to the main core of the mind. Now, one may wonder, but Sifu, we want to find out what happened after we die. What for go through all these things, you know? Yeah, so think about it. Why are we concerned about what happened after we die? Why are we concerned? If not for the fact that what happened when we're alive is important to us. If what happened to us is not important while we are alive, we wouldn't care about it. Think about it. Yeah? You think about it, there are so many things that happen in your life. Right? Like, for example, if we were to consider the idea of death not simply as an organic process, but in terms of the start and end of a process, then let me ask you, do you care about, like just now we had lunch, right? Yeah. Then at night you will brush your teeth, right? Do you care about what happened to the toothbrush after you throw away? I'm not saying it's right or wrong, Yeah. But we don't really think about it, isn't it? Yeah. Why? Because for us it's purely functional. Doesn't mean that the function is not important. But for most of us, toothbrush is toothbrush, or sifu. Brush, you know? If you lose your toothbrush, do you care? You probably wouldn't care, right? Because it's replaceable. Are your feelings replaceable? Becomes tricky, huh? Have you all thought about this question? Are our feelings replaceable? Because if it's replaceable, then why should we treat it so differently from our toothbrush? But that's the thing. Not telling you that there's a right answer that is replaceable or not, or wrong answer. No. But what's important is your answer. How do you really feel about your feelings? Because that's what matters. Because that's what determines how you relate to it. How you relate to it. If you relate to it very strongly, then it's going to affect you as to what happened after you die. Yeah? Or for that matter, even before we die. To me, that's what is important. Yeah? So don't try to think of the model dictionary answer like this or like that. Ask yourself, do you relate to the toothbrush the same way you relate to your feelings? Anyone? I probably don't think so. How about your thoughts, the way you think, Do you treat it as functional, as purely a clinical process? In our day-to-day, we identify with all this very strongly. Strongly in what sense? Strongly in a particular way, we call identification. We say, this is mine. This is me. This identification is what causes us to be upset when someone comments on it in a way we don't like. This is what we call the ego. Yeah. And perhaps that's also why, if I dare say so, that's also why we're concerned. After we die, where will this ego go to? Is any of you concerned after you die where your t-shirt go to? Hey, you'll be surprised. There are some people, I don't know, I haven't seen before. Maybe there are some people on the deathbed. Akong, you have something to tell us? Open the drawer. Open drawer. What is inside the drawer? My t-shirt. Hey, but don't laugh. Oh. Maybe that t-shirt is given by the grandmother or by the mother, and the mother passed away, and this is the only thing that, you know? Yeah. You know, who knows? There are people who prepare what they want to wear. And then? Oh, how they want to dress up. In a way, that's not a bad thing also. If you know when you're going to die, that might as well settle everything, right? Otherwise, can you imagine if your family member passed away, then you're like, hey, Papa would like to wear this one or that one? No, the other one. Well, then in the end, spend 2 hours discussing, then you are down there. Yeah. So we are concerned in that way. Yeah, we are concerned in that way. But whether we are concerned or not, something does happen. Yeah. In Buddhism, we say, we don't just so-called die. The trouble is, the moment we describe it right, it's very easy to have the notion of a soul that's going to the next life. Because if not, then what are we talking about, right? Yeah. So the term rebirth is very interesting. It is pointing to how after the ending, the last moment of consciousness, then at some point there'll be a re-arising, a rebirth of the consciousness. But yet, even this term rebirth has a slight issue in there, which is that it is not the same consciousness that is taking rebirth. Yeah. It's simply a new arising of consciousness, a new birth of consciousness, rather than a rebirth of the same consciousness. In a way, this talk, this session, if you can accept that, then it's very simple. You die, then somewhere else, the right conditions for consciousness to arise, then there will be a consciousness arising. And how this consciousness arises is due to many conditions. Part of the condition is from us, from this life, and all the multitude of lives, conditioning the next life. If you can accept that, then this talk is very simple. Just like that. We can go into a bit more details. So what determines where this new birth is happening? We say due to karma. Not decided by Shifu, not decided by Bodhisattvas or Buddhas, not decided by some divine being. but decided by our karma. Just like today, how are we born here? You think about it, in many classes, I often highlight, to understand how one birth leads to the next birth, you need to understand how our day-to-day, moment-to-moment, lead from one moment to the next moment. I would presume none of you come here by chance, isn't it? Yeah. It's not that you were at home doing things and suddenly, I'm okay. Well, that would be interesting. Suddenly, I was in Choa Chu Kang. How come now I'm in Amokyo? No, that would be very interesting. Yeah. You went through a process of coming here. But even that process you being here didn't start there, isn't it? You being here started off because of what? A prior decision to come here. Ask yourself, the moment you think you want to come here, that person, yeah, the body, the mind, the thinking, the mental state, yeah, is it the same as the one now that arrived here? Not exactly the same, isn't it? Key thing is not exactly the same. They're not totally unrelated also. Yeah, so in Buddhism, we use this term conditioned. That means the earlier state conditioned, yeah, serve as a condition. Yeah. So serve as a condition for this to happen. But just because there was that moment doesn't mean this will definitely happen. Depends on many things in between. Yeah. Many other things in between. But as long as this has happened, we say that there must have been a starting point that trigger, yeah, plus everything in between. Just as when you see a tree, for sure there must have been a seed. As long as there's a seed, you don't definitely get a tree. You still need conditions. Can you understand? The cause versus the result. Hang on, she has a question.
When we die, what happens to the consciousness? Because we don't take this immediately. Where does it go?
You go to this lobby and then go for registration. You go to Alaya and check in. Yeah.
Galaxy
VF. Galaxy VF. Xiao Xing. For her, on the final day, Amma, what do you need? CPF. Yeah.
Yes, you can use.
Still can use. Can. Not by use you. Not by you. Yes. Somebody else will help you use, don't worry. Yeah, so your question actually has two parts. Yeah. So what happened to the consciousness? Yeah. That was the first part of the question, right? What happened to consciousness? So technically, the first six consciousness, once we die, will cease, will completely cease.
The moment when the brain is dead?
This part is a bit tricky. Why do I say it's a bit tricky? Because the six consciousness, six different consciousness, eye, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind, don't necessarily arise just because the brain is not dead, you know. And it happened many times, you know. Yeah, it's a condition that all of us go through. Our six different consciousness, eye, ears, nose, tongue, body, and mind, sometimes don't function. Yeah, when? When we are sleeping. when we're sleeping, oh, without dreams. Doesn't mean that when we go to sleep, brain dead, ma. Correct, or the brain is still not considered dead, ma. But consciousness don't arise. The first six, yeah. So depending on whether we want to bring in 7 and 8, or we just stick to the first six. If we stick to the first six, then we say that every night actually this happens. What? So it is technically possible that our consciousness totally just cease, and then when there are conditions, somehow it arises again. Yeah, and this is also the point that the Yogacara school hinge on to say, what is the basis? There must be other parts that is not so-called active, but it's there. Modern psychology, I think, may have borrowed a page. They call it the subconscious. In Buddhism, we call it the alaya consciousness. Yeah, and number 7, which is the tainted consciousness. Yeah, ran u yi. Yeah, which is the tainted mind. That is also there, but it's not active. Yeah, it's there, 7 and 8. Yeah, and the Yogacara school says, if not, then a person sleeping without dreams is equivalent to a dead person. Both has no sixth consciousness. But that aside, dying, in some ways, is like falling asleep without dreams. The difference is, when we wake up, it's somewhere else already. When we wake up, it's somewhere else already. Not in our bed. Yeah. I've been thinking about this, but wow, quite amazing. How come to go somewhere else? But then one day I realized that, you know, our earth is spinning, right? So when you fall asleep, you fall asleep. So when you wake up, you're actually somewhere else. You know, relative to the earth, relative to your bed, you are still the same place. But relative to absolute space, you are really somewhere else, though. On top of that, besides the earth spinning, the earth is orbiting around the sun, right? So, but then you wake up, it's somewhere else. And the whole, our solar system is part of the Milky Way. Yeah, it's also orbiting the Milky Way, I think. And then Milky Way is one of the galaxy that is part of the local cluster of, is it Cassiopeia or one of the cluster? Yeah. So we have been, it's just that conventionally we say, but we wake up at the same place, right? But we don't wake up at the same place. Even within a bed, don't tell me we sleep like that and don't move. Then the next day we happen to move, then jialat, wake up, why spring? Yeah. The point to answer your question is, in between, depends. It's like physics. Do you want Sec 4 physics or JC physics or university physics? Sec 3, Sec 4 physics, G equals to 10, or later on 9.8. A level, 9.8, don't know, 3, 4, something. Yeah, university, you have to go and calculate 9.8. Premise six is very simple one. Premise six, what goes up must come down. Got him. Why it come down, don't ask so much. Sec 4 will know. Right. At different levels, we are describing the same thing, ma. But premise six really just tell you, there's gravity and you come down. That's it. Right? Premise six, upper primary, learn about work done or something. Huh? Ash, they all learn about work. Primary school, right? Yeah. But that's a very simplified model, no? Because it doesn't calculate friction, yeah? Frictional forces, yeah? But not to bring in physics again. The point is, so even in Buddha's teaching, there's different granularity given also. Yeah, because for some people, to know that there's this process of rebirth is good enough for them. And even more importantly, that it is related to our actions. Yeah. The key thing. Yeah. In some ways, the Buddha is not so concerned about describing the actual very mechanics of the rebirth process. He's more concerned about that. Never mind how it works, you know. This is one of the key drivers is your karma, wholesome, unwholesome. And why is it so important? Important because you're going to suffer or not, you know. Exactly how the process works to let you suffer, maybe not so important. So if you look at all the teachings on the rebirth process, the key focus is about how, number one, the rebirth is according to the quality of the karma. Yeah. So when you look at it, you understand this part, then the whole framework makes more sense. Because the whole framework doesn't go into so much detail of the mechanism itself, but it just in a way teach us how, you know, yeah, hacking our karma. Yeah. You just have to fix this part. Don't have to understand the whole process. Just fix this part. Which part? The mental quality. Make sure that it's wholesome. You fix this part, then that part will somehow work. Then when everything is okay already, then you want to spend your time to go and do research exactly how this process, the final one, can. There are also those who, as they practice, yeah, then when the quality of the mind becomes more refined, they're able to observe this process themselves. So those who are enlightened, they can observe the arising of karma, they can observe how this person's current life is due to a specific series of karma. But for normal folks, the Buddha don't ask everybody to learn that. Because not everybody want to be so expert, to be such an expert. Curious. Curiosity killed the cat. So then your second part of the question was, but not all rebirth take place instantaneously. Yeah, so in Buddhism, there are slightly different school of thoughts. There are those that believe rebirth is spontaneous, instantaneous. Yeah, there are those that say no, not always. Yeah. The not always includes the instantaneous. What do I mean by that? Like, if we consider PSLE posting, after you get your results, you get a posting immediately. But does it mean all students get their posting immediately? No, some students somehow have to go for a appeal, like this, like that. Correct or not? So that model includes the instantaneous one. So in the text, it says there are certain rebirth that is spontaneous, yeah, instantaneous, heavenly and hell rebirth, yeah, ghost rebirth as well, but not all categories. Yeah, those that is spontaneous rebirth, that means manifestation, is spontaneous, especially the heavy karma, heavy wholesome, heavy unwholesome. Other people not so sure. Next life how? Those who do heavy karma, steady one, yeah, steady. Other people are not sure, ask you, where are you going? I know, but don't know whether it's the good one or bad one. So beyond that, then most of it is due to our habitual karma. Yeah, habitual karma, our connection with our past karma. Yeah, so depending on that, plus if your rebirth requires a lot of father mother out there, potential father mother out there must come together, then you can take rebirth. So human rebirth not so easy, because we're not to put it bluntly, human beings not whole day preparing to have kids, ma. Yeah. So the possibility, like let's say among all human population, like if you have good karma, then your rebirth can only take place in certain places, also, ma. If you have bad karma, also only in certain places. And in those certain places, there must be some couple who have connection with you and, you know, yeah, compatible to your karmic rebirth, then you can take rebirth. You cannot just go there, hey, come here. Go to your future father, hey, tonight don't do OT, kya. Cannot. Yeah. So maybe some days when you feel like, hey, come today, don't feel like doing OT, maybe coming. Coming to take rebirth. Don't know. Hard to say. Ah, no, that one is not kuhen yekui. Yeah, but that one is not kuhen yekui. Not kuhen yekui. That one is what we call zhong yin sen. The kuhen yekui is actually a realm already. You already reborn already. That one is spontaneous rebirth. But that is usually due to very strong attachment. Strong attachment, niggliness. Yeah. So a few different qualities, then reborn in the hungry ghost realm. Okay. Anybody want to be reborn in hungry ghost realm? No. You'll have a question.
Oh, no. You mentioned the conscious, it's a different conscious that arises.
Yes, consciousness.
So, but there is still a main core that still exists with some changes. That's the change. It's not a totally different.
So I thought of different analogies. There's one that I thought can be quite close. I don't know whether it's close enough, but it's quite close. Like for example, you broke your phone. Let's assume it's a smartphone, okay? So because everything is in the cloud, ma. So you just have to get a new phone, log in, and then sync. So once you sync, you cannot say it's exactly the same, but you cannot say it's exactly different also. Yeah. Depending on whether your new phone is higher quality, then it's still the same data, but presented in a nicer way, higher resolution. So let's assume, let's say you're from an old phone, you upgrade to a new phone with higher specs. But some people maybe old phone, but they still buy the same model, so exactly the same. Yeah. But then maybe some people after they lose the phone too many times, then not enough money to buy a good phone, then buy second hand phone. Then the phone, once they get it, battery weak. Yeah. Yeah, but data sync still the same. Yeah.
So the cloud is still the same, but it's only the body.
So the parallel in Buddhism is the alaya consciousness. The trouble is, alaya consciousness for some, they start to look at it as the permanent thing. But by definition, alaya consciousness, like the cloud, is impermanent. If it's permanent, you cannot store data. So alaya, by definition, is impermanent. So it's still not a static thing that is eternal. But it is as close as I can find a real life parallel, the cloud. Scientists are trying to discover ways to upload our consciousness to the cloud. Yeah, there's actually a sci-fi movie, a TV series, Battlestar Galactica. Do y'all know of this sci-fi? Yeah, there's a very old version from I think in the 70s or what. The idea is they managed to come out with artificial AI or something like that, like. And basically the consciousness You know, actually, it's not artificial. It's that the consciousness can be back up. Yeah. I think those beings are called Cylons. Yeah. But anyway, the point is, in sci-fi, in science, there are research into trying to capture our consciousness. The trouble is, what is consciousness? Yeah. What is consciousness? Yeah. So what happens after? Like if I tell all of you, don't worry, let me take a look, check. All of you, next life, good life. Hey, good ah. Huh? If I tell you, some good, some bad. Oh. If I tell you, but the Buddha didn't teach us to do this. Yeah. The Buddha instead, in one of the sutta, called the Mirror of Dharma. There was one time the Buddha and Venerable Ananda was at this town, and each time a person passed away there, Venerable Ananda would go and ask the Buddha where that person has been reborn. Because the villagers are concerned, but don't dare to ask Buddha. So to go and ask Venerable Ananda, and the Venerable Ananda helped them to go and ask Buddha. So Buddha replied once, replied two times. After a while, the Buddha said, you know, if every time someone passed away, you come and ask, you'll be weary, you know, you'll be quite, you know, troublesome, you know. So instead, the Buddha teach him what is called the Mirror of Dharma. That means a way for you to determine whether you are reborn in a good state or not. Yeah. And as I recall, one of the definition was sotapanna. That if a person has practiced to the point where the person has confirmed confidence in the Buddha, Dharma and the Sangha and the precepts, yeah, these four, then this person will definitely be reborn in the higher state, human and above. This is the one thing that is assured. Everything else, not so certain. You can do a lot of good karma, do a lot of charity and so on. Not certain that you'll be reborn in human realm, you know. Why? A lot of merits, but wrong view. You get reborn in the animal realm with a lot of merit. There were some SBF students and their house is 3-story high, I think in Siglap. Then once a year, they organize a Chinese New Year celebration. Me and another venerable, they will invite us. Their cat that stay in the 3-story house has a 3-story cage. Ho mia lang, ho mia meow. Yeah. In the Buddha's time, there's a story of the elephant. Right? The Arahant and the elephant. Yeah. That's a very classic example of how just because you have worldly merit doesn't guarantee you human rebirth. Yeah. You will enjoy yourself, you know, animal realm, but in the animal realm. Yeah. If you only cultivate merits, no wisdom, and have wrong views, then you can still enjoy yourself, don't worry. 不会便宜你了. But animal rebirth. And the trouble with animal rebirth is sometimes some people tend to interpret these statements in a very negative way. Say, oh, you're discriminate against animals. No, it's not that we discriminate. It's just simply that by and large, difficult or near impossible for animals to learn Dharma. There are animals that can be very kind. So still cyclical karma. Better than not lah. I'm not saying that sometimes you see the YouTube video, the good food, then go and feed the bird, feed the fish, you know, share the food, yeah, the dog, take care of each other, yeah. Then the what the does this what is
dolphin
that?
Dolphin that save people.
Yeah, dolphin that save people. So many examples, right? So we know that animal realm, that they are capable of kindness as well. So when we read about Buddha's past life, when we are younger, we read, it seems like, wow, magical, like incredible fairy tale. But in real life today, we see YouTube, there are. Who knows, some of them may be Bodhisattva. I'm not high enough to know whether Bodhisattva or not. Oh, yeah, this one, Guan Xin Pusa, Siu Sim, Siu Sim. Bobby, Bobby. Yeah. But the trouble is, how many of us, when we are reborn as a dolphin, we remember to help people and we will not be busy eating other fish? You know, how many of us, when we become cats or dogs, on YouTube you also see a lot of cats, very rascal, very jerk one, always go and do stupid things. Yeah. So the trouble is, So in Buddhism, it's not that we discriminate or we look down on this realm or that realm. But it's just that, and we don't say that because you're born in that realm, so you are stupid. But it's that you have the stupid quality, then you get reborn in that realm. Stupid in what sense? Stupid in the sense that you hold on to wrong views. Foolish, wrong views. Yeah? And then you still, then worse is, if people tell you the right view and you still... then that is that wrong view. It's not a punishment. The way I understand karma now, it's not really a punishment. It's just a result. Yeah, that is in accordance to your. With that kind of mental state, boom, you get reborn that way. Yeah. So the rebirth is the result. The result of past inclination. Past inclination. Yeah. But usually we are only concerned, we are mainly concerned on the result. We're not so concerned about the cause. Yeah. It's a bit difficult to learn. Because Buddhism don't guarantee you the results unless you guarantee the cause. You fix the cause, the result will take care of itself. Don't have to worry one. That's why earlier on, during meditation, I highlighted. You all have an opportunity to get in touch with Buddha Dharma, must learn something. Don't many years later in your deathbed, then, Amma, what do you want? God, Sifu. Which Sifu? Chuan Kwan Fasa. Amma, Chuan Kwan Fasa 10 years ago passed away already. Amma, you already 96 years old. Chuan Kwan Fasa 20 over years older than you. Oh, I thought he's still around. Oh, okay. Call that Sifu. Which Sifu? Chuan Kwan Fasa. Oh, dementia. Don't wait until that day. Yeah. Start today. How can you have that confidence that future life will be okay? Take care of today. Take care of today. If you practice awareness, mindfulness, you practice the presence of mind, yeah. Really, it can be quite troubling, because it means that. I'll give you a worldly example. I'm a very worldly monk. I like to give worldly example. It's like in the company, I presume most of you have working experience. How many of you like audit? Like to be audited? Huh? Anyone? Even auditors don't like to be audited. Auditors like to audit people. Maybe not like also. But nobody likes to be audited, isn't it? Buddhist cultivation is doing constant audit, no? And not wait for people to audit us. It's auditing ourselves. It's basically doing that. Every day, checking. Yeah? Checking the process, checking the input, checking the output. Yeah. So, when you all have company audit, yeah, maybe sometimes the management will pick some teams, to be an independent body to do the process audit, right? Yeah. When that happens, they all feel good. Feel kanchong like, wow, jialat, jialat, must clean up things. Yeah. Yeah. But it's very similar. Yeah. Because why? We are not enlightened, ma. So our mind, our mindset, our actions sometimes not so pure also. A bit all over the place. But we got to start. Yeah, got to start. So initially it's a bit troubling because initially we will check, walao jialat. Yeah. But don't be afraid. Then later karma, the global karma system audit, that one no chance one, no. Yeah. And that one every single seat, every single instance. Wow. That one is full audit, not sample. In real life, we do sample check, right? That one is full audit, 100%. From the moment you are born, yeah. And then your sibling, then you... snapshot. Every single moment. Yeah, but don't worry. From today, you start to do a stock check. Yeah, inventory check. Yeah, process control check. In a way, and meditation is basically saying, okay, let's, you know, when you do audit, you mean you start shut down process, ma. Yeah, you cannot go to the front line when people are still handling cash, and you will say we are doing audit now. Cannot, ma. You must stop it to do audit, ma. So meditation is doing that. Shut down first. Yeah. It's to train yourself to occasionally shut down to do some audit. Then when you're very, very familiar with the process, then what happens? System audit is constantly enforced. Yeah. Like usually traditional shops or whatever, yeah, you have to do an inventory check physically. But modern one, don't it? The moment you take it off the shelf, the RFID, whatever, immediately detected, update the system, right? So when you really cultivate to the point, you're constantly having a clear, full awareness. Yeah? What is my current state? Then what happened? What happened? Oh, I tell you, interesting good news is, of course, I already mentioned the first part is troubling because you realize, what, jiala leh. Now you're aware all this not so wholesome. Then you start to think back, wow. And as you develop yourself, your awareness extends beyond the present moment. You start to be aware, what, jiala, all this while, this is actually not so correct. So there's a bit of fear and, you know, worrying. But later on, then you start to have a positive side to it, which is because you have transformed this part, then you know very clearly this part that is impure, then transform to pure. So you are free from the problem of this. You know yourself. You don't have to go and ask anybody. But it doesn't mean that you are completely pure. But from this, you get assurance in turn of your future life. Because if enough of it is purified, this is a key thing. You don't need everything to be pure to have a good rebirth. You just need the critical part enough. Yeah, but don't always just tsun-tsun one. You know? Right. To go to university doesn't mean you must have perfect score also, right? You just need to meet the minimum criteria. The only thing is, don't always go for minimum criteria. Yeah? That's why when we come for, whether you come or not, since you are in touch with Buddhism, must at least learn. Yeah. Otherwise, Buddhism to you is just like any other religion. Just bye-bye. Hope. You pray, then hope that something good will happen. Buddhism is not like that, no. Buddhism is Buddha teaching us, then we take responsibility. Now, I don't say that all religion is like that also. Now, a lot of religion has also reinterpreted their teachings to encourage people to be more self-responsible as well. You know? In fact, sometimes I would say that in many religions, there's this emphasis. It's just that in sometimes, maybe not so emphasized. Yeah? Then depending on the teacher, some people prefer to not emphasize that part, because why? Emphasize self-responsibility, nobody want to come out. Blessing, I bless you, then everybody, oh. Yeah, but Buddhism cannot run away from it. Yeah. So what happens after we die? Depends on who? Depends on ourselves. Yeah. So how does it help? So if beings while they take rebirth, right? If some merits, yeah, that is already planted, and they can through the our dedication, our we recite the teachings, and through the guidance, they can connect with the wholesome Dharma. Then spontaneously, the wholesome karma seeds can ripen. But that's like normal people, PSLE results 252. Immediately, the school give you offer, immediately selected. But then this one, maybe 1 is 0. Borderline case. Then have to find, oh, ECA, very good. This one, swimmer. Then, this is just an analogy. Don't think that you all go and swim. Okay? So, be responsible for yourself. To me, this is a very positive thing. Yeah, it means that you don't have to wait for someone to give you a chance, no. Yeah, you just take charge of your own life. Whether you attend SGC or not, every day. Yeah, every day. Try. Okay? 愿消三障诸烦恼，愿得智慧证明了，愿得智慧证明了，普愿罪障悉消除，普愿罪障悉消除，世世常行菩萨道，世世常行菩萨道，阿弥陀佛。